Hi, today is October 15, 2017. This is MobiView's podcast number 226. I'm Todd Ogasso, or John Westfall, and this is going to be kind of a rant-filled podcast.
Todd is feeling very ranty today, and I even took my rant out because I didn't want to detract from his.
Put it back in.
It seemed like there were just so many rants.
So many rants.
I didn't want to make it seem like I was monopolizing or taking away from the importance of Todd's rants. Because I usually am the ranter. And
that's right.
So
that's right. I've been building up these rants.
For many, many weeks, Todd has been building some rants.
Okay. But before we do, two tips. One, John probably already knows, but I didn't. And that is this. When I got my Apple Watch Series 3 a few weeks ago, one of the things I was really kind of disappointed to find is that if you look in the list of watch faces that ships with the watch, there wasn't a chronograph. And I remember seeing a chronograph watch face mentioned amongst the shipping watch faces of previous watches. So I was kind of disappointed. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't realize is that if you go into the Apple Watch app itself on your iPhone and you click on the face gallery, rather, you can find chronograph and a whole bunch of other watch faces that you can download and use on your Apple Watch. So I may not use this chronograph permanently, but I kind of always wanted to have a chronograph watch when I was a kid and never did. So I'm pretty happy to have one now. That's tip number one. Tip number two, before I get into my rants, I was at a telehealth mini conference this past week. It was a 2-day mini conference. And one of the things one of the tips I learned for video conversations, it's really interesting, and I had not thought about this before. You know, a lot of us do video conferencing with our friends and business contacts, and if you're a healthcare provider with you know, with your patients. Mm-hmm. And I'd never thought of this. And he's a pediatric psychiatrist, works with a lot of children, and so you know, body cues are important for everyone, but I guess more so for kids. Especially the kids that he works with. And the tip is this. If you have multiple screens or you have one large screen, I think he said he uses a 27-inch iMac monitor, place your windows or the screens vertically and not horizontally. And here's the reason why. He says during the course of a conversation, as somebody is looking at you and you are looking at them, if you are moving your head side to side, you are constantly telling the person no whenever he or she sees you moving your head in the screen. Whereas if you're reading something using top-down, so let's say the video of the person you're speaking to is on the top of your screen or on a monitor on the top of a two-screen situation, and your notes that you're typing into or reading from are on the bottom, as you move your head up and down, you're saying yes, as if in acknowledgement, even though you may not really be saying yes. You're simply moving your head up and down to refocus your eyes.
So if you think you're going to be more in agreement on the call, put it vertically. But if you want to suddenly send the message that the other person is full of it, then you want to...
Right.
Got it.
If you are in a negotiation in North Korea, you do side to side.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, I thought it was a really good tip. One I'd never really thought about, but it makes sense. It made sense to me. Okay, now that we're done with the tips that are presumably good, let's start with my rants. Rant number one, still Civilization Revolution. My favorite game since 1990, whenever it was released on DOS, on the PC. And I've been playing it ever since in one version or another. Currently playing Civilization Revolution on the iPad, but unfortunately, if you upgrade to iOS 11, it'll no longer work because it's a 32-bit app, and no 32-bit apps will work on iOS 11. I think, John, you have one or two apps that didn't work, right?
Yeah, I had a few that didn't make it through, and I'm annoyed by that because the manufacturer just kind of dropped the ball.
Yeah. In my case, it's a tiny manufacturer named Electronic Arts. Some of you may have heard.
I think I've heard of them once or twice.
They don't actually develop the thing, but they're the distributor in the iPhone store. But in any case, so I found a site called iMyPhone, imyphone.com, that has a really helpful set of screenshots showing you how to delete the iOS 11 download from your iPad or iPhone to further prevent it from accidentally updating. In other words, you'd have to re-download it, which I guess it'll do it again. And that way you can stay on iOS 10. Now, John, you have a warning about this technique.
Well, so the way that the fine people at iMyPhone described it was, say you want to hold off for a month or so, kind of let the initial bugs get out of the operating system. Right. That doesn't seem like a bad idea. But what seemed like a bad idea was the solution that they're giving to block Apple's update server on your home network.
Oh, that if one. You, yeah, I saw
if
that
you
one.
Forget to turn that off, that could be problematic. And so if you have devices that you're just leaving at home and you're not taking anywhere, I don't think there's a problem with leaving them on older versions of iOS. But if you've got, like, I take my iPad pretty much everywhere with me. I take my iPhone everywhere with me. They connect to Wi-Fi networks that I don't have full control over. I don't really want an unpatched operating system.
That's a very good point. And I will say that the iPad Pro that Civilization Revolution is running on only is for playing Civilization Revolution. It never leaves my home. I have a different iPad for different iPad
you have
Pro
a
for
dedicated
everything else.
Civilization iPad.
That's right. Now, the other way to do it is if you have a really, no, I shouldn't say really, but if you have an older iPad that is not able to be upgraded to iOS 11 because it's a 32-bit machine like the iPad 2 or iPad 3, I think, you can, you know, and you have it on there. You can't download Civilization Revolution from the App Store anymore, by the way, or Civilization Revolution 2, which I didn't like. You can still play it on these older devices, which will never be upgraded because they can't be upgraded. So that's a tip with a caveat from John, which you should heed.
Yes. Well, everything I say, everyone should always heed.
Well, that's what you say. Yeah. Okay. My next rant is about my $160 Apple Smart Keyboard for the iPad.
Yeah, this
Pro
thing, I finally saw those pictures, and man, this is, if you're listening to our podcast and you've never gone to actually look at anything we've talked about, go look at the pictures that Todd posted. Okay, now go ahead and rant.
Okay.
Well-deserved rant.
All right. So when I bought my iPad Pro 9.7-inch, right, this first small iPad Pro, I knew that I make good use of keyboards attached to tablets. I don't use them all the time, but when I really want to use one, it's really useful. Taking lots of notes, lengthy email, that sort of thing. And the Apple's Smart Keyboard cover, or Smart Cover Keyboard, whatever it's called, it's $160. It attaches to a smart connector and iPad Pro, which means no Bluetooth setup, funkiness, you know, delay in touching the keys to get it to activate, none of that stuff, right? You plug it in and it's there, and since it's a cover, it's always plugged in. Really cool. So I get the keyboard, and with the iPad, the 9.7-inch iPad that was released in 2016, and you know what? It is a good keyboard. It's not a great keyboard, but it is certainly useful, and I think I got some pretty good use out of it. But here's the thing. Although the keyboard still works fine as a keyboard, as a cover, it is a disaster. It started unraveling about 8 to 9 months after I purchased it, so it was still like near the end of 2016. I noticed it was fraying. And at this point, about 18 months after purchase, if you look at the photos on my blog, and I've got a link on the show, if you go to mobileviews.com and take a look at the show notes for today's podcast, number 226, it has a link to my other blog where I post all kinds of other stuff, including doodles now and then. That shows two photos of my iPad Pro's smart keyboard cover, and it is a wreck. it looks like a disaster movie thing. Like, oh my gosh, somebody trashed the room, and look at the keyboard cover. I am not hard on the keyboard cover. In fact, that iPad has not moved out of the house since I bought it, and the keyboard cover is attached to it, so it, by definition, has also not moved out of the house since I bought it. I take an iPad Mini 4 when I'm running around. And if I needed a full-size iPad these days, you know, since earlier this year, I have the 10.5-inch iPad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it doesn't get heavy use. I mean, it's used at home, but the keyboard cover is mostly just sitting in the cover mode, or, you know, on the back if I'm playing Civilization Revolution, which doesn't need a keyboard.
Now, I will say that I think this might be a problem of your particular keyboard, because I have the same keyboard, okay, and I've had it on the 12.5-inch and okay, the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, the 12.9 and the 10.5.
Right.
And I never saw anything like this with mine. So yours looks like it just kind of gave up on life pretty easily on, because if I take, you know, the one that I'm kind of showing you right now, I've had this one
that looks
since
pretty good.
I got the 10.5, and it's, you know, all the seams are intact, and so yours might have just lost the will to live at some point.
Failure to thrive.
Yeah. But it is
not a resilient
horrible
keyboard cover.
No, it is not. Yours is depressing to look at.
So at any rate, when I got the 10.5-inch iPad Pro earlier this year, I said, I am not going to spend another $160 on this piece of junk. And I bought a nice, I think I paid $10. It's not a keyboard cover, but it's a nice, you know, magnetic cover that, you know, does the sleep and resume thing that you expected to do. And how long have I had it now? July? So I've had it a couple of months. It, you know, it seems pretty good so far. For $10, I'm not complaining. Okay, so that's I think my second rant. Yeah, my second rant. Now, my third rant is something John can't replicate, but others have, and that's with Procreate. So Procreate, which is by far my favorite drawing app ever. I'll go that far about it, to say about it. I have tried a bunch of drawing apps over the years, you know, because I thought I wanted to doodle. None of them really caught on with me, and I really never doodled on a regular basis, drew on a regular basis. But this year, when I started my Doodle a Day project on January 1st, I had already bought Procreate, like, in 2016. I already had an Apple Pencil, and so I started using those two for my daily doodles. And that combination is great. I have to say, it is awesome. But recently, Procreate updated its app to 4.0 to deal with the iOS 11 update. And it was a little problematic, even at the 4.0 release. With 4.0.3, which came out early last week, I think, it completely broke my experience on the iPad Pro. It often would simply crash on launch. If it didn't crash on launch, it would freeze and then perhaps crash while drawing. John can't duplicate this, but I think he's looking at his head down.
I am trying. I have been, since we have started our podcast, I have been trying to get Procreate to crash.
Okay.
And thus far, it has not crashed.
Okay.
So I've got my little doodle that we can use as evidence of Procreate.
That's nice, by the way, John. What is that, a sheep? I can't tell from this.
I don't know what it really is supposed to be. It's kind of a random guy looking up at a sun in a purplish background. We'll post it on the blog, and others can figure out what
there
it is.
There you go. There you go.
But
we'll use a Rorschach, right? You'll have to tell us what you think it is.
Well, that would just delay the whole purpose. It's up to the reader or the viewer to figure out what this thing is.
Okay.
But yeah, I can't get it to do the same problem. I'm using an Apple Pencil. I'm using this. Of course, we both have the 10.5 iPad
right,
Pro.
Correct.
So I don't know. Maybe
hard
it just doesn't
figure.
Like it.
Hard to figure.
Now, I did update to the latest version of iOS 11.
Yeah, me too. So my 10.5 is running iOS 11, you know, latest update. And I have not tried Procreate 4.0.4 because I'm still mad at them. But, you know, to give me a little credit, they do say in their update notes that they are still trying to address the crashing and freezing problems that some people are experiencing. Not everyone. If you go to the Procreate blogs, they have lots and lots of people with very similar stories to mine. And, you know, I'll give Procreate a lot of credit for not, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not to censor the people complaining about this problem and addressing it directly in their update notes. So I'm looking forward to having a functional version of Procreate to use for my doodles again. in the meantime, I'm using another app that I've used a couple of times before called Tayasui Sketches Pro for the iPad Pro. Works fine with the Apple Pencil. It is a very different user interface model. Not quite. Well, it's different, right? Somebody else wrote it. It's not Procreate. Mm-hmm. That, other, if it were, you know, why would you have two of the same thing? But anyway, it's a very different model. Like any kind of app, it takes a while to get used to and learn the tools and figure out why it's different. I bought it earlier this year because I, like I said, I don't carry my iPad Pro out of the house. And when I travel, I take a mini and I'll take either a capacitive pens, stylus, or the Pencil by 53, which works with these apps. Mm-hmm. And it's different. I'm still trying to make peace with it and understand. I'm looking at John's drawing right now. Fine drawing, John. I'm saving it.
Thank you. Yeah, we can. I'll now pay more attention now that I've given up on trying to get Procreate to fail.
Right. So, any rate, so Tayasui Sketches Pro is pretty good. It's about, I should mention, I think Procreate's normally about $7 or $8. And Tayasui Sketches Pro is $4.99. By the way, you know, when I first saw the name Tayasui, I thought, oh, it's some kind of Japanese company, right? No, it's a French company. So I don't know if it's a French word or a French person using a Japanese sounding name, but pretty good app. I really like its watercolor, which I can't do well in Procreate. I just don't understand how to use that tool. Mm-hmm. But it's more obvious in Tayasui Sketches Pro, so I'll post some doodles in our blog too, so folks can see what I'm talking about. But lots of fun. Still waiting for Procreate to fix things for my iPad. Apparently it works fine in John's.
Well, maybe it's just time zones or, you know, yeah. I don't know. Name, you know, we have the same vowel, but we don't have the same consonants in our name. So maybe that's it. I don't know.
Right. Now, John, I can't remember. Are you an Uber fan or how?
I have used Uber when I'm in cities that have Uber.
Uh-huh.
But I only am in cities that have Uber maybe once a year. So not a huge Uber user, and I wouldn't consider myself a fan or a detractor.
Okay, and you have a car where you live, so you don't need it where you live.
Yep.
Okay. So I have never used Uber. I've never had a good or bad experience, you know, therefore. But I've been kind of ranty about them because because of the things I've read about them doing to competitors, to their customers, and like tracking them without telling them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the behavior of their, you know, employees, including their CEO. So, I'm not saying this because I hate them, but just because I find it interesting as a person who follows these things. And that's this. So UC Davis Institute of Transportation Studies released a research on what they is claimed to be the first ever study of with representative data. It's a survey. It's not, you know, actual data. It's survey data. For major cities across America on ride hailing and its impact on its travel decisions. And interesting is that they're basically, the summary of their finding is Uber and Lyft most likely add to traffic in major cities today because it takes away people from using mass transit, you know, buses, light rail, you know, whatever. So I found that kind of interesting because, you know, the thought is, of course, since you are not driving, you know, you're using a taxi-like service, and, you know, that's a lot of problems in a lot of cities. So, like London, which has banned Uber, you would think it would, you know, it might actually help with congestion and reducing the number of cars in the road, but apparently it doesn't because it, like I said, it actually detracts from other modes of mass transit. So I find that kind of interesting and something to think about when you choose your next mode of transportation if you don't have your car with you. And I should say that, you know, despite my rants, and I do rant out loud about this, I suspect that if you're like other people, you probably don't care what I'm saying right now. Because, how should I put it? Well, there's somebody I'm married to, and also my daughter, who take Uber when they're not in town, despite my rants. So, obviously, you know, I don't have a lot of impact with these rants.
Well, I would direct the rant slightly more at mass transit and its sorry state in America.
Okay.
There are very few cities that have very good mass transit systems.
Yeah.
And even the cities that were doing fairly well, for example, even 7 years ago when I was living in New York, mm-hmm. the MTA was doing fairly well with the subways, and now all I read are how subways have gone downhill in just 7 years in New York.
Wow.
So I, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows. Sometimes we're good, sometimes we're bad, but I don't blame anyone for saying that they would rather not take mass transit, that they would rather take a car just directly where they need to go.
Yeah.
Because mass transit doesn't always fit. But you are right. I think some people think, well, if I'm not driving, then there's no problem here.
Yeah. So, you know, there's something to that, you know. And quite frankly, depending on your transportation needs, it might be cheaper to use Uber every day than to own a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, giving gas and car payments and insurance.
I do wonder how many people would normally walk that now use Uber.
Well, you know, according to the data that was published by UC Davis, there's a chart in an article that summarizes their research. There actually is, you know, a small but observable data on people who say, I don't walk, I take Uber or Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary because sometimes you can just walk it and that would be probably better.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. So, returning to my earlier rant about civilization.
Back to another rant.
Right. Revolution. And, you know, so I've been thinking, well, what am I going to do? Because someday, either A, it's going to become such a security risk, as John mentioned earlier, that I'm going to be forced to update my iPad Pro 9.7. Or I'm simply going to click the wrong button, and it's just going to update overnight.
Mm-hmm.
With no recourse, as far as I'm aware. So what am I going to do? I mean, I can't go down the rest of my life without playing Civilization Revolution. That's just ridiculous. And John's mocking me, so you can ignore him.
It's crazy talk. Crazy talk.
So I went to the... You know, I have not played a game on a notebook computer, a desktop computer, in probably since the iPad came out, honestly. But I went to go look on the Google Play Store. I'm sorry, I went to go look on the Mac OS Play Store to see, you know, what's... And you can buy Civilization 5 and 4 and 6 and a couple other things for Mac OS, for the desktop, you know, for the Mac or MacBook. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, well, you know, from a point of view of an iOS user, it's kind of expensive. It's about $20, I think. But what really surprised me, having not looked at the Mac OS App Store in a while, is how few reviews there are. You know, if you look at a popular game or even not a popular game in the iOS App Store, you'll have hundreds, if not thousands, of, you know, reviews contributing to its star rating. On Mac OS App Store, you'll see like maybe a couple hundred, sometimes less. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, maybe it's just because this is an older game and people don't like turn-based games. So I started looking at other apps, including presumably popular ones, non-games and whatever. And still, there are like maybe dozens of reviews, a couple hundred reviews, you know, not the thousands of reviews that we commonly see aggregated into a, you know, 4-star rating or whatever for the iPhone, iPad app stores. So I thought that was really interesting, which led me to, you know, I mean, my first theory was, well, maybe people, you know, just don't buy many apps, or at least these apps, so they don't have very many reviews. So like I said, I looked at other apps which presumably, you know, sold a lot more. And even those, you know, some of the ones that Apple lists as the most popular really didn't have much in the way of reviews. So I assume people are buying apps, but the reason there's not many reviews is people who buy desktop apps simply don't review stuff.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've bought 3 or 4 games through the Mac App Store, which I have to say I'm very happy they have certain games. Basically, uh-huh. If you really liked gaming in the late 90s, Apple's got you covered. Late 90s, like mid-2005, so SimCity 4 Grand Theft Auto and things like that. And even looking now, there's... SimCity Complete Edition, so you can get even the more modern SimCity if you'd like it. SimCity 4 is fine for me.
Which has less than 200 reviews, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great game, but not many people are reviewing it. Not many people are talking about it. Right. Even the most popular paid game on the iOS App Store or on the macOS App Store is The Sims 2 Complete Condition or Super Collection.
Right.
And I'm looking at it right now. It has 471 ratings, but it doesn't look like it has too many reviews. Well, actually, it has a decent number of reviews. Yeah. So still, it doesn't seem like you think to rate. Of course, I've never been one to think to rate anyway. So
I do rate games or, you know, apps in general. Like I said, I really haven't bought anything from the macOS App Store in I don't know how long. I can't remember, actually. In fact, the last app I bought for my Mac was the update to Audio Hijack, and that's not available on the App Store. So, you know, you buy it and download it directly from Rogue Amoeba, the developer. But
I will note that if you are looking for certain games, mm-hmm. like Roller Coaster Tycoon, the original and Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 is available on the Mac App Store and on the iOS App Store, and Roller Coaster Tycoon, the original, is available on iOS. So those are fun games to
waste away
a lot of time with that I wasn't aware were on iOS until I just did a search one day and found them on there. So sometimes these great games come out and we don't really even know they're there, because if you don't go looking for it, you never get it pumped to you, even if you're the prime demographic, I would assume, for it.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember buying and downloading SimCity for my iPhone or iPad years ago, but the user interface just didn't seem comfortable to me. Has that changed, or do you like SimCity on the iPad?
Well, I don't do SimCity on the iPad.
Okay.
Roller Coaster Tycoon on the iPad is okay.
Okay.
But SimCity, I just play SimCity 4 on my MacBook.
Okay. And I used to be a huge SimCity fan. I mean, when I used to travel in the 90s with my gigantic 7-pound notebook, that would be, you know, kind of precariously balanced on my coach, you know, food tray to wild hours away while I traveled. Because, you know, any place you go from Hawaii is basically a minimum 5-hour flight, so
mm-hmm.
you need something to do while you're sitting around doing nothing else. One other thing I'm considering, by the way, since I am an Android and Chromebook user, which supports Android apps, is I was looking at buying Civilization for Android, which is $10 in the Google Play Store. A little bit expensive, but, you know, for an app. But I think I probably paid around the same thing for Civilization Revolution on iOS. It is Civ 2, though, so I don't know. I like Civ 2 on the desktop when it came out for DOS, you know, over Civ 1. But Civ 2 for iPad was terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. And it looks kind of the same. It's a 3/4 perspective view with no overhead God's eye view like there is in Civilization Revolution, which I really prefer. There is a free FreeCiv. It's an open source app, if I recall correctly. It used to be in SourceForge when SourceForge was still safe and good. Now I have my doubts about the site. It's free, so I may start with that on my Samsung Chromebook Plus in preparation for the day when I accidentally neglect to prevent my 9.7-inch iPad Pro from upgrading to iOS 11 and find myself unable to play Civilization Revolution. Anyway, on that sad note, there's one more thing. I don't know if you had a chance to play with it, John. I played with it for a couple minutes, found it kind of interesting. And Google has released something called Data Studio. It's a web-based tool. And I'll put the URL in our show notes, but basically it's google.com/analytics/data-studio. And it's a tool to grab data from a variety of sources, including Google's own, big data sources. And do charts and analytics and other stuff. Now, I haven't had a chance to really play with it, but I was able to get some broadband data from who was it from? But anyway, it was broadband data from Ookla, I think. It's not current. It was, I think, like 2010, 2011. But, you know, just to have a big pile of data to play with. nationwide data of download speeds at that time, and I was able to bring it in and get some, you know, build some charts up and things like that. So it looks pretty cool. Something worth looking at. It's free, so, you know, can't argue with the price. Figure John might find it useful someday since he generates a lot of data.
Yeah, I think I will probably take a look at it.
Yeah. Anyway, John, if you want to rant, we have time.
I have a number of mini rants in the world. I wish that Apple would allow you to send out through iCloud email with a custom from address. It annoys me that that's still, so I can't use my custom domain and use iCloud email. That's frustrating. It frustrated me that all of my networking hardware died last month, but now I finally got my network kind of back up and running at home, which I've been very happy with a QNAP NAS, and I just installed a new ASUS router this week that works quite well for what I needed to do. So that's at least looking better, although the last piece of my tech collective this fall that I'd like to get would be that new iPhone X. So still thinking I'm going to get that. You're still happy with where you're at with your iPhone?
Yes. The more I read about the iPhone 8 and 10, the less I want to buy one. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying that incrementally, they don't give me much.
That's because you made the right decision on the size of your last iPhone.
Oh, that's right. You have like a 32 or 64 gigabyte
phone. I have a 32. Yeah. I need one. So.
Yeah. So I have a 128, which is, you know, now I think not even available. I don't think you can get a 128 anymore. It's either 64 or 256, I think.
And of course, I was thinking to myself, you know what? I will buy the 256 because I just have enough space. And everyone else will probably want the 64. Nope. I was reading something the other day that said that pretty much everyone who wants to buy the iPhone X says they're going to buy the 256.
Which is the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
The annoying thing, everyone else shouldn't buy one and I should get the first one. That's how I view this sort of thing, you know? But.
You gotta figure that the iPhone X buyer demographic is probably a power user, probably has disposable income just by definition of its, or, you know, by its cost, relatively high cost. So they probably don't worry about stuff like money, basically.
Yeah. I'm so close to getting to that point, but I'm not there yet, you know? I'd like to not have to worry about money, but in my case, I just need to worry about a device that isn't annoying me with space warnings and not being able to get stuff done the way I need to get it done. So
I hear you. In fact, you know, I have a similar problem, except it's on my MacBook Air. So those of you who have been listening to the podcast for a long time know that I had been using a 2010 MacBook Air to record the vast majority of our podcasts, and then 4 years ago, when my daughter graduated, when my daughter graduated from high school, I inherited her 2009 MacBook Air. I'm sorry, MacBook Pro. And so I started using that. And when she graduated from college this past spring, I inherited her MacBook Air 2013 model. So I now am a proud owner of a new, for me, 2013 Mac, you know, versus a 2010 or 2009 Mac. But my daughter takes a lot of photos, and I don't mean just on her phone. Now, she uses a real camera, unlike most young people, and she uses a real digital camera, and she will shoot hundreds of photos in a day when she's running around, you know, visiting somewhere. So even though it's like a half a terabyte SSD, I configured it pretty. I think I maxed it out when I bought this thing for her 4.5 years ago. She's pretty much almost out of space. And, you know, we've got it backed up to Google Photos, and we've made multiple backups to external USBs, but I'm still reluctant to delete her photos from this thing. So I need to give some thought on how I want to do. Maybe I'll do two more full backups of it to separate device, you know, to other devices that I have. And then I'll start deleting it, because I think I've only got like 20 gigs of free space in this, and Mac OS is complaining, hey, you've only got 19.5 gigs of free space, or whatever it is. that it's unhappy about. Okay, so now, John, I got to ask you, why do you want to use your Apple account for other
devices? Because, quite honestly, Apple push email would be it. The Gmail solutions, even though I have one of my own that gives you push Gmail, and even though there's some signs that Apple might be lightening up on that a little bit, maybe we'll support push Gmail at some point again in the future. Mm-hmm. I still would rather, if I could, put everything in iCloud versus Gmail and Google. I just put it there just for having it all in one place.
Really? I guess I haven't had that problem because I have things being absorbed, you know, forwarded into Gmail, and Gmail can send out a response using that email address. Mm-hmm. So I guess I just don't need push all as much as you do.
I just really like push. Yeah. There's no real reason I need it, but my solution right now is to use the Outlook iOS client, and it does support push Gmail. So I've been using that, but every so often I get a wild hair and I decide that I just want to try to do something different, and I'm annoyed I can't.
Right. And I should note that, you know, we talked about this months and months ago when I made the switch, but I got rid of one of my accounts. Let me rephrase that. I got rid of one of my domain hosts. I had two. And I moved ogasawalrus.com to medium.com. And which I'm now using that blog again, but I wanted to keep the email addresses from it, you know. And Medium, mm-hmm. of course, you know, is a forwarding site, so that wouldn't help. So I went with the then new Outlook.com professional service. It doesn't cost much. I think it's like $40 a year or something. And I moved my GossipWalrus.com email addresses to it, and it seems to be working pretty good. Now it does have some funkiness about it, like if, you know, I have multiple email addresses but they all go to the same inbox, which is okay for me because I'm just one person, but you know, if you have more than one person using your custom domain, then might not be a great solution.
I recommend everyone do what I did, which was about 10 years ago, sign up for a bunch of Google Apps accounts. So go back in time, sign up for when Google Apps offered 50 free users per domain.
Right.
And just go with that. That's what I've been using. I've been pretty happy with that. But it's not really viable for people today to go do because time travel has not been invented yet.
Well, that we know of. But that's a conspiracy views the topic.
Conspiracy views episode 1FA.
Right, you know, that one.
Conspiracy views might get numbered in hex. We don't know.
That's right. And of course, if you have solved time travel, you have solved a whole lot of other things besides this whole domain, you know, custom domain stuff.
You know what they probably solved? They probably solved how to keep civilization on your iPad.
Well, actually, if I go back 10 years in time, I'd be running civilization on my first iPad, so I'd be happy as a clam.
You can just keep going back every 10 years. Just live in the window between 2010 and 2017 for your whole life.
I'd be fine with that. Actually,
you can watch the death of Windows Phone over and over again. Which that was something we haven't talked about, but Windows Phone truly dead
again.
Joe Belfiore is using something else now.
Bill Gates is using something else now.
Sorry to say it, Windows Phone gone.
Yeah. Well, as you know, many of our friends, several of our friends are true fans of the platform, and I'm sure, you know, we do not mock them. We are, you know, sad for them that their favorite platform is gone. I think you and I both know how it feels like because at one time it was our favorite platform, and then we just said, maybe not so much anymore.
So, I mean, I wrote a book on it. I enjoyed that platform for the time I had it. But when writing that book, I remember thinking, you know, Android and iOS at this stage are so much more evolved. I don't know how this thing's going to survive.
I'll tell you a funny story it's about Windows CE. So years ago, our friend Frank McPherson, who has been a frequent guest here and was my original co-host for at least a couple of episodes of this podcast, Years ago, Frank had a contract to write a book, which became a series of books, really, about Windows CE. And I remember, and he asked me if I'd come on board as his technical editor and just kind of, you know, review what he's writing and kind of come in behind and fact check him, which I agreed to do. And the funniest thing I remember is our discussion about Access Mobile, whatever the heck it was called, Access for Windows CE, Access for the handheld PC, whatever it was. And we looked at it, and it was so incredibly weak and useless. We struggled with how to come up with a reasonable example of how you would use it. Is this, because basically our assessment is, why would anybody use this? It is useless, you know?
I had a few similar moments when I was writing Windows Phone 7 Made Simple. There were a few things where I thought, I don't really know how to justify an example here, but I'll put an example in.
Just because you had to, right?
Yeah, I had to have something for it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you remember that first version of Windows Phone, the only ways you could get, you could open files in the apps were either through, I think, email attachments and SharePoint.
Yeah.
There's no and other I, cloud storage. That
and
was
I didn't
available.
Have SharePoint back then, so that was a yeah. big help.
Yeah, so there was just, I remember having to write up something about SharePoint. I'm thinking, if you're using a book called Made Simple, you're probably, SharePoint is probably not something you have available to you, yeah. but...
And I remember asking Microsoft to give our group, we were in Windows Mobile MVPs at the time, access to our own SharePoint server so we could at least test this stuff out and verify how it works when we get, you know, when we get questions from other enthusiasts. But they you know, I don't know. It's too expensive for Microsoft to run a small server. Yeah. I don't know, but.
Their response would have been, you have a TechNet subscription as an MVP. You go download it and set it up.
Yourself. Yeah, you set up your own SharePoint. Yeah, and this is before SharePoint Online, I should note. So that was not an option back then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm kind of ranted out. I'm exhausted.
Well, that's good. I'll take over the ranting for the next few months. And okay. you can just relax. Cover non-ranty things.
Okay. Alrighty then, so in this rant-filled episode is coming to an end, number 226. We'll see you again in 227.